This podcast is sponsored by Hercules Strong Guard Tires. Visit HerculesTiresCommercial.com to learn more.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
Hello and welcome. He is Gary McNamara. I'm Eric Harley as we begin a Tuesday. Gary, good morning.
He's channeling his inner Mandelbaum.
Yeah, he is, isn't he?
Mandelbaum.
I mean, all, you know, Pete Ducey asked him, I'm paraphrasing here, but basically asked him the question, do you think that inflation is a political liability?
What a stupid son of a bitch.
Audio cut of the year.
One more time.
Let's do that again.
Joe Manchin said today that he will never get rid of the filibuster.
What a stupid son of a bitch.
Kyrsten Sinema.
Oh, why not? Why not?
She
doesn't Senator, exactly fit, but okay, yeah.
Said she will never be for getting rid of the filibuster.
What a stupid son of a bitch.
Yeah. Is he Mandelbaum, everybody?
Now, here's the thing. A friend of mine brought it up.
What?
I had told her about it because I didn't see this till I woke up at 10 o'clock.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh my, we have the audio cut of the year already.
Oh yeah. I mean, yeah.
We haven't got even to the February yet, and we have the audio cut of the year, which really encapsulates his administration so far after the last year.
Yeah, if you think January 24th delivered our audio cut of the year. We have, like the COVID Omicron variant, we have peaked. It is not, maybe I shouldn't say that. Maybe I shouldn't say we've peaked already, but it is definitely the audio cut of the year. We're having our big banquet at the end of the year, and so we'll see what else he says. But that's definitely in the running.
Well, you have to mask up, right? Even though it is December.
It's in late December. Yeah, well, it might be canceled because of, you know, COVID.
The second Omicron variant.
Yeah, yeah.
You heard about that, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I mean, from what they know, it's no.
Well, I mean, it came out, 3 or 4 weeks. It must have been 3 or 4 weeks ago. It was right around the first somewhere. The whole Deltacron thing, you know, it's a new variant, and a lot of doctors reviewed that and said probably cross contamination in a lab somewhere.
Yeah, now they know there is a Omicron variant, though.
Yeah. No. The Omicron, but Deltacron was a
That's not what I was talking about. Okay.
I know. I was adding to that.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I thought you were explaining that it
got No. The Omicron, the new Omicron 2.0. Make that happen. Hashtag Omicron 2.0. Make it happen. You know, the question will be, it's funny because I was watching, again, as I do each day, Dr. John Campbell, a British doctor who is an expert in the field, and he makes presentations based on data. He looks at data, and he, on Monday, his presentation was the presentation we did. It's funny because he said, you know, I don't see anyone in the mainstream media. He sounded almost like a conservative talk show host. I actually don't know where he stands politically. But he did the CDC data that we did yesterday, you know, and they're looking at this. But one of the things that he believes that he's pushing for is to have the antibodies test, you know, and push that instead of pushing everybody to just go out across the board and get the vaccine. In his opinion, not everybody, you know, if you've got the antibodies, you're, as the CDC data, by the way, points out, it's from the CDC, that at least up until the Delta variant, we don't have data on the Omicron, But the people who were infected before Delta hit were protected from Delta by getting COVID, their natural immunity. And so, you know, he wants to promote the natural immunity and find out who in society, you know, he thinks it's a good idea to find out who in society has the antibodies naturally. And this is something that we've been pushing for a long time. But the question will become then, you know, what from here? What is the next variant or, you know, behavior of COVID going to be?
Mr. President, what do you think about Eric's last statement?
What a stupid son of a bitch.
Yeah, he's a little slow sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. I was thinking about that yesterday, too, just because we had talked about that really since Friday when the CDC came out and said natural immunity is where it is. I mean, that's it. And we didn't mention this yesterday. I know we've talked about this before that, you know, maybe antibody tests should be the way to go, but there is no doubt about it now.
There's no doubt about it now.
Yeah.
It isn't to discount, and I think Dr. Campbell's clear on this, and a lot of doctors have been clear that have talked about natural immunity. It isn't to say you shouldn't get your vaccine because he is very pro-vaccine and says that you should get it because if you haven't been exposed to it, then it's still very dangerous to you, especially if you've got a more dangerous variant, then the vaccines will keep you from getting the worst effects of it and keep you out of the hospital. That's the, you know, ultimate goal. But for those who are in society now who have the antibodies, there's also this growing consensus now, again, according to Dr. Campbell, that it is the natural immunity is outlasting the vaccine-induced immunity, and could be the pattern for quite some time. And so it all goes back to George Carlin, doesn't it? You know, building your own immunity. You go out and, you know, you as kids, and of course he was older than we are, but as kids we went and we played outside and you didn't worry about being washing your hands every 10 seconds. Well, when it comes to a pandemic, I mean, at least this pandemic, this virus, then for the most part, for healthy people, your body is more robust as a result of surviving it. Again, that's not to, you know, discount anyone who the worst effects or died from it.
And again, I'm not for the vaccine mandates. I think Omicron, it's just stupid now. It's because it's going to spread and almost everybody's going to get it or has had it.
Yeah, right.
You know, that's just the way that this virus is. But if you're going to put in and this is more, I think, of a legal question. If you're going to put in a vaccine mandate and you're still going to insist on it, I can see some court cases now based on the new evidence that has come out from the CDC and Dr. Campbell also, but the CDC officially coming out, because that's officially what you look at.
Right, right.
The CDC has officially said that the best immunity is natural immunity.
Yeah. You know, there are parts of the world, including parts of Europe, who for workers in the medical community, if they show that, if they demonstrate that they have the antibodies, that they recovered fully from COVID, that actually goes toward the vaccine policy. In other words, it works for them.
Right.
That you should be able to do. If I've got antibodies, because it comes down to take the risk you're going to take. And that's what it's about. The risk that you as an individual are going to take when it comes to the mandates in general.
But if you're going to mandate something, and again, I'm not for mandates, but if you're going to mandate something now, I can see legally, since the CDC came out and said that natural immunity is way stronger,
right,
6-7 times stronger than getting the vaccine alone, that actually the vaccine doesn't mean as much, not even close to what natural immunity is,
right,
if you're trying to have a mandate.
Right.
So you would actually prefer, if that's the road that you're going down,
right,
you would prefer since last Friday, and nobody's debating this now. Do you see anybody?
Right.
I didn't
right.
see anybody debating this.
No.
That
no.
natural immunity. Why, has Rand Paul said a word? You would think that Rand Paul would be all over this going at Fauci.
Yeah, I would think so, and we may maybe that's you know, maybe he's preparing to do that because he's been saying this from the beginning, and this is something, you know, I want to be clear, Dr. Campbell and other doctors from around the world. The reason I follow them and are paying I'm paying attention to what they are saying is because it's different than what others are saying. It's different than what we're hearing from Walensky. It's different from, certainly, at least up until recently, what we're hearing from Fauci. And the political side and bureaucratic side of this whole thing. I want to know exactly what those doctors think as they study the data from this. And this is one thing that Dr. Campbell does. He presents data. And he said in his Monday presentation that this CDC data is probably the most solid data that we have seen yet. And it is data-based. Everything that his conclusion is essentially, you know, that the, and this is the conclusion of the CDC data, that the natural immunity is just as strong, stronger than the vaccines.
Right.
But if someone has only natural immunity, then they have, and again, it depends on the individual. We, you know, we don't want to say this is for everybody who has had COVID, because some people may be immune compromised and still have gotten COVID. But the point is, if you've survived it, your antibodies, they are, by and large, according to the data, they are as strong or stronger than the vaccine. And for those who have the vaccine and natural immunity, they didn't actually fare any better than those with natural immunity, according to the CDC.
Well, the CDC said six times if you have just if you don't have a vaccine but have natural immunity, and seven times if you have, is what we read yesterday, roughly seven times if you have the vaccine and natural immunity.
Yeah, I don't.
That it's six times as great.
The natural immunity.
The natural immunity, yes.
Yeah. I don't know if that's the conclusion that that Campbell came to, but the point is that...
Well, you were just saying that he was saying the CDC, and that's what...
Well, from the data. He drew his conclusion from breaking down the data as a doctor. So the point is that the natural immunity, and something we have suspected all along, is as laymen, as a society, we have to, again, measure our own risks of what we're going to do. And we don't get to make the call on it when the government sets in mandates.
Yeah, here it is.
Local
by early October government. Compared with unvaccinated people who did not have a prior infection, case rates were sixfold lower in California, 4.5 lower fold lower in New York.
In New York. Yeah.
In those who were vaccinated but not previously infected, minus 29 fold lower in California and minus 15. Oh, okay.
Vaccinated but not previously infected.
I'm sorry. I got it wrong here. Sixfold lower in California and 4.5 lower in New York in those who were vaccinated but not previously infected. So just vaccinated.
Okay? Right, right, right.
29-fold lower in California and 15-fold lower in New York in those who had been infected but never vaccinated. 32.5-fold lower in California and 20-fold lower in New York in those who had been infected and vaccinated.
Right.
So there it is.
Yeah, so it...
As I said, the difference in the rates between the last two groups, even though it was a little bit greater, was not statistically significant, the researchers for the CDC found. So
right.
That's what Campbell
was saying.
Right.
And he also looked at the breakdown of each of those cohorts in New York and California. And he said, look, this is what you want to look for. You want to look for things that are consistent. And he didn't find a flaw in that data. And he's very open, and I think a lot of doctors are. Look, if you learn something new, then of course you're going to introduce that and you're going to reanalyze whatever it is. When they say conclusion, it's on something where you're constantly learning about it. it's never a conclusion that lasts forever. But this data, he said, is the most solid data that we have seen so far. And we'll see where it goes. But at least the medical community is acknowledging this. The media may not, the mainstream media. I almost chimed in and wrote him a note on his social media that, well, mainstream media Red Eye Radio talked about it on our show this morning. We covered it before he did. Not that that makes a difference, but we are covering.
Right. Coming up on the show today, Biden channels his inner Mandelbaum. The president called Pete Ducey to apologize for calling him the stupid SOB. Teammates of a trans swimmer say women are now third-class citizens. Who's been saying that here for the last decade or so? Rocker Neil Young says, take me off Spotify or remove Joe Rogan.
All right.
We just had to bring this up.
His protest has gone from, you know, what it was in the 60s to take me off Spotify.
Well, I guess rock and roll will die then. Latest polling out there. Apparently, the democracy is not in peril, and a whole bunch more. We've got a good average show ahead. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Here's a question that I would have about Biden. And if you didn't hear it, here's what Biden had to say yesterday to Pete Ducey, who asked a question about the politics of inflation.
More inflation. What a stupid son of a bitch.
Called him later and said, it's nothing personal, pal. Who uses the word pal? By the way, that also relates to a Seinfeld episode. By the way, I do appreciate, I think it was on Twitter, somebody said, well, I didn't, you know, what you guys were talking about with the Mandelbaum, and I went and did research on it. And it's just, I mean, it's perfect. I mean,
yeah, no, it is.
The late Lloyd Bridges playing Izzy Mandelbaum on Seinfeld, which... is a great caricature of Biden.
No, it's perfect.
It acts like Biden does. But here's the thing. They were walking away. If you see the video, the reporters were turning around and walking away.
Yeah.
They were sort of asking the questions. Even Ducey was walking away, sort of. He was asking that question. And he's just, it's not like
it was over. It was over. They were reporters were leaving the room.
And he's just still standing at the podium. He's not ready to leave. And my question was, who didn't cut his mic?
Well, what's interesting is that in the video of it, after he says that, after he calls him stupid SOB, he looks down at his microphone. He realizes that just went out. And he looks a bit surprised. And I thought to myself, okay, that's part of the liability of having Joe Biden out there in front of people. That he's not aware of his surroundings. Either that or he doesn't care. It's one or the other. I have no idea, actually.
Well, we remember, though, they were cutting off his mic early on in the presidency because did he get angry because he was being mocked for it and said, don't cut off my microphone? And this is the result of it? Because clearly at any other time, the first 6 months of him being president, his microphone would not have been on as they were all walking out.
Well, you know, here a few weeks ago when they said, well, it's time to let Biden be Biden. I'm wondering if that was more like everybody on his staff was like, you know what? We give up. I mean, we tried cutting his mic. We told him to walk away and not. No, and let him be him, and we can't control that. Hey, he's the president of the United States. What are we going to do about it? And I think that could be the case, but he clearly didn't realize that his mic was on, and he looks down at his mic like, oh, that just went out. Oops.
Stand by. This is going to trigger some of you. Red Eye Radio.
Oh, yeah, this is because we're going to talk some economic news here. Yeah. I'm Gary McNamara. He's Eric Harley, 866-90 Red Eye. Nice roller coaster in the stock market yesterday.
Boy.
What a ride that was.
Yeah. And pairing the losses at the end of the day and ended up, the Dow ended up I think, 99 for the day. But, man.
You know, we hear about the worry with Russia and the Ukraine and,
yeah,
and right. all that, but mm-hmm. there was, you know, economic numbers that came out yesterday that weren't good at all. You had U.S. IHS Market Flash Composite Purchasing Managers Index come out. As explained here in Breitbart, that's one of the first comprehensive looks at economic growth this year. Fell to 50.8 in January from 57.0 in December, severely undershooting expectations and signaling almost no growth in the economy so far in January.
Yeah.
Economists had forecast a reading of 56.7.
Mm-hmm.
Soaring virus cases in the U.S. economy brought it to a near standstill at the start of the year, with businesses disrupted by worsening supply chain delays and staff shortages. Like I told you, when I went to the driving range on Sunday, and there was a backup, there was a wait because nobody was there to retrieve the golf balls. Mm. That's never happened in my entire life. Mm. They ran out of golf balls at the driving range because they didn't have the labor force.
Mm.
Now, that's serious.
No, I think that's probably the most serious economic indicator there can be.
When it hits the driving range.
When they run out of golf balls at the driving range.
Yes, is uh-huh. the answer to the question.
Right.
And the question is, Gary, when the guy is collecting the balls in that caged tractor kind of contraption out there,
right.
do you try to hit him with your driver?
No,
the,
but
the answer is yes, you tried it. Well,
what I was thinking, actually, we'll kind of pair these two together. What I was thinking when you were talking about that, I thought, okay, have the golfers, the people that go to the driving range. Now, here's what happens. You get up there, you get your bucket. But now you've got to go out, and before you do that, you've got to go out and retrieve your bucket, right?
No.
You got to go fill your bucket first.
No.
No, this is going to be fun. Trust me.
Self-serve?
Okay, finally, I'll just say this. If you need a helmet, fine. But you go out while others are hitting their bucket, and then you come back in. And then it's a game of, like, bop-a-mole.
I know. It's Russian roulette. Is what it, that's
whatever you want to call it, but it's going to be fun.
Yeah, you don't. I don't take with a lot of the people at the driving range. Let's put it this way: as they've always said, 90% of golfers never break 100 on the golf course.
Hmm.
That means 95%.
Oh, I did. I got like 300 or 400 one time. I break 100 every time.
Well, I believe I'm talking about the reverse and how we score golf.
As a golfer, I'm a perfect bowler.
Which my
bowling score? I would beat Tiger Woods.
You always
golf score.
You always break 100.
I'm far beyond 100. Yeah,
no, it's about 95%. You have to watch out for the S word. I can't say the word. When you're a golfer, you can't say the S word.
You can't?
No, you can't say that, because if you say the S word, and I'm going to use it professionally and not in the golf world.
You're taking off your golfing hat. And you're putting on your professional talk radio hat.
I will be protected from the
your media hat
from the S curse.
Yeah, okay.
You never say the word shank.
Okay.
Because when you get the shanks, it's amazing. You can be a great golfer.
Right.
And Kevin Costner did, what was that movie that he played in?
Tin Cup?
Tin Cup.
Yeah.
when he got the
shot. I never actually saw the movie, but I know of the movie.
And he got the shot. Anybody who golfs, you can be a great golfer, and all of a sudden you hit the ball and it goes sideways. You're like, how did that happen? That can't. And you say, okay, I just wasn't focusing. And you get down and you try to hit it again, and you do the same thing. You're like, wait a minute, I'm a good golfer. How am I shaking it? And it's like, did you say the word? Did you think about it? And so everybody sort of knows that culture of the S word in golf. And what happens is most of the time you're standing too close to the ball. You just take an inch step back, and it cures it for most good golfers. But but no, you wouldn't do it. But yeah, but that was just that's just one of the things that is an indication that when you go to the driving range and you've got like a 40-minute wait, and you've got dozens of people standing around because they can't get golf balls. You're talking about a recreational activity, but it does put that impression in people's minds. It did for me. Like, whoa, this labor shortage is bad. Yeah, we didn't have the people to come in today to collect the golf balls. And you're like, really? I'll drive that machine for free. And I'll be sitting there saying, hey, try to hit me, because they're
right
in the cage.
Right. Yeah, well, and you know, there are two major factors right now that are playing into this whole great resignation thing. But beyond that great resignation thing is COVID. We're getting, we're not there already, we're getting close to the peak. And the peak doesn't mean it's over. It means if we get beyond it, it means that the worst part of it is over, but it means that you still have a number of people who are infected. And the thing is that if you are infected and you can't go to work and you were at work the day before and blah, 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 even the immensely popular radio show Red Eye Radio was affected by it.
Yes.
And, so you're seeing that play out as a result of, COVID and the policies that are in place by companies. If you're positive, don't go to work.
So you have that here. The flash composite measures economic activity in both the services and manufacturing sides of the economy. Readings above 50 indicate growth.
Yeah.
The gauge of business activity in the service sector fell to an 18-month low of 50.9, barely above the unchanged mark of 50. The manufacturing metric fell to 55 from 57.7 in December, the lowest reading in 15 months. The slowdown in output growth was broad-based, with both manufacturing and service sector firms reporting near stalled output as a steep spike in virus cases associated with the Omicron wave meant ongoing supply issues and labor shortages. And labor shortages, according to the IRS market report. Manufacturers said that new sales growth was often held back by weaker demand due to price hikes and efforts to work through inventory. And that's not the end of it. The Chicago Fed Economic Activity Index unexpectedly plunges as production consumption weaken. The Chicago Fed National Activity Index plunged to a reading of negative 0.15 in December from 0.44 in November and 0.75 in October. Economists had forecast a December reading to fall to a positive 0.25. The index is compiled each month by the Chicago Fed using 85 indicators of national economic activity. And then you have the Bloomberg story here. I mean, you could just from yesterday go on and on and on with, bad economic news. Bloomberg talking about that in the heartland, that in small towns in the Midwest and South are among the hardest hit with inflation. The national average is 7%. Consumer prices in small towns in the Midwest and South rising 9% or more. The state with the most small cities registering inflation of at least 8% last quarter was Wisconsin. A close second was Texas, where several of oil towns experienced a surge in prices at the end of the year. The findings are based on data from Moody's Analytics, which include 400 metro regions. Zooming in on cities with fewer than 200,000 people provides a more detailed account than government figures, which break down consumer prices in about two dozen large cities,
right,
obscuring the local experience of more rural and suburban Americans.
Well, and the reason, you know, that all makes sense, because in those outlying areas, in the rural areas, the cost of transportation is added, is greater for those goods that get to the shelves. And, you know, that's the problem is that, you know, in the major metro areas, you have the local warehouse setups and infrastructure of Amazon, Walmart, Target, all the major retailers. And so you have things that are very, very close, lower cost in terms of shipping and delivery. And when it comes to those outlying areas and those rural areas, the smaller towns, you add to the cost everything, gasoline and anything that you're going to buy, there's a greater cost to it.
From the story in Bloomberg, the inflation pain shows up everywhere, from a paper company facing both soaring demand and surging costs to a trucking company in Wisconsin paying double last year's prices for the vans that they need.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see the pressures ending anytime soon, said Kurt Bauer, president of the Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce, the state's largest trade group. We're setting new baselines with prices. Wisconsin's high inflation likely stems from its small-town character and reliance on factory jobs, according to Noah Williams, a University of Wisconsin economics professor.
Yeah.
The economy is twice as concentrated in manufacturing as the rest of the nation, and people are more likely to spend on goods, which have undergone the biggest price increases, than services.
Right, right.
So, and they go on and on talking about Midwest households also spend a higher share of their income on gas and cars, whose prices have skyrocketed. People in the region
right.
have more vehicles per household than other parts in the United States. So, mm-hmm. you know, you see yesterday, and I'm sorry, Biden talking about inflation and getting a panel together to increase competitiveness, like the Biden administration is going to compete, you know, or, you know, is going to increase competitiveness, like that's the goal of any far left person, was a joke yesterday.
Well,
I'm sorry.
It was a joke. It was flawed, obviously, fundamentally. And the because you and I have been asking the question, I think we asked it yesterday. I'm not sure if it was on the air or not. But the question, all right, what does the administration do? You're going to turn around, you're going to reverse everything, and then you're going to lower taxes. You're going to create, because what the government can do is nurture the environment for the expansion of wealth. You can't put a panel together and go, we're going to promote competitive behavior in the marketplace. No, you're not going to do anything. It would require tax policy to change. It would require what the president can do in the executive branch is go and undo a lot of what they have done in those executive orders through the EPA and other agencies as well. And they can rescind a lot of that. Now, tell me that's going to happen. And expect me not to laugh out loud.
You know, I was actually expecting this yesterday that Biden would come out, because they've done this before. They've talked about this before. We need to tackle this inflation. So we're going to help promote a more competitive arena out there for business. So in order to do so, we're going to raise corporate taxes on companies over 1,000 employees.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah, right. No, I mean, that would be their approach, right? Yeah. We'll punish you.
Exactly.
That's the only thing they know to do. That's their only game.
And that way it'll lower prices. Since inflation is good.
Right.
Well, at least he's not saying inflation is good anymore, or inflation is positive, and that spending government money doesn't cause inflation, but...
Yeah, only a deuce who would say that.
So, yeah, it's when you... Oh, and then the news that the Fed... Remember, just last week, the Fed might raise rates 3 times this year. Yesterday, you started hearing 4 times this year.
Hmm.
They may raise rates.
By the way, technically, Pete is a son of a Steve.
Yes, he is.
Yeah.
Yes, that's true. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Yeah, so when the Biden came out yesterday and we start talking about, you know, what we're going to do about inflation, get to, you know, basically get a panel together, get a group of government people together in order to increase competitiveness, you're going, blah, 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 shut up. Because you know as well as I do, if they could tomorrow, if they knew that they could pass $3 or $4 or $5 trillion in government spending, Biden would do it in a heartbeat.
If they
could care
they
less
could
about inflation,
go after corporations, you know, with a massive tax increase, they'd get it done tomorrow. Yeah. I mean, they would. Yeah. They're out to punish industry, not create competition. Give me a break. Competition in that the government competes with the private sector. Yes, but that's not competition.
This hour's news is brought to you by Travel Centers of America, home of World Lens Coffee, the freshest roast on the road.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America and around the world, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara. Download our Red Eye Radio app today and listen whenever you want to the show, which is our podcast. And our podcast is our show. So we make it very, very easy for you. I think I'm going to change my name.
Are you?
Yeah, I was reading here. Rasmussen yesterday tweeted out the quotes with the the curse words taken out of it because there were so many MF words in it. The liberal talk show host, whose first and middle name is Leonard Larry, but he decided to call himself Charlemagne the God. Okay, so, but it's Leonard Larry.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't have the same oomph, does it?
Nah.
It's Charlemagne the God, and it came when he was a drug dealer, and he called himself Charles, so people would not know his real name when he was a drug dealer, and then he was at night school, and he heard about King Charlemagne, and he decided to call himself Charlemagne the God. So it comes from using the word, the name that he was using, you know, by his own quotes.
I didn't know that.
Yes. And so here's what he said. He said a couple of days ago, I guess, I'm hearing it. I'm listening to, and he is, remember, he is the guy that Biden was on. If you don't vote for me, what was the quote? You're not black.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, if you're Biden. Right. He said, I'm hearing it. I'm listening to people be like, man, where is Trump? Get this Biden out. I'm serious. The Biden administration, they feel like they would rather get it wrong. Like, you know what? At least we know where Trump stands. These Biden administration people is gassing us up, lying to us, promising us things and didn't deliver. Like I cannot wait and see. I'm already watching it, watching Democrats start the campaign. They're already starting the campaign. They're saying they're already like, Hillary, you got to get out there and vote.
Mm-hmm.
Vote. Democracy depends on it. I'm like, when are you going to start governing like democracy depends on it? No, for real. Like, stop telling me the death of democracy is upon us, but you're not governing like it is. Now, I can't play the video because interspersed is MF, 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 MF throughout
right.
it because you
right.
need to do that in order to make your point. Now, he's as liberal as you can be.
Yeah.
And at times he is a race baiter. But I was thinking since he changed, maybe I could change my name.
Uh-huh.
For example, I have a great golf game. So let's start. I could change my name from Gary McNamara. Wouldn't this sound better? Tiger, Your Highness Almighty. You don't like that?
You get Gary the Shank.
No. Eric Harley and Tiger, Your Highness, the Almighty. I like that. If he can do it, why can't I?
You want to go with Tiger?
All right, Phil.
You want to go with Phil?
No, Phil doesn't fit. It just doesn't have the same.
Yeah.
Phil doesn't fit in with Your Highness Almighty.
Let me see.
Even Jack wouldn't, you know. It just doesn't.
Yeah.
Ah, all right. How about Seve from Seve Ballesteros, the late Seve Ballesteros?
Okay.
That would fit, right?
Sure.
Seve.
All right.
Your Highness the Almighty instead of Gary McNamara.
Or the mighty Lee Trevino. Okay. That one might be taken.
Or Chai Chai Rodriguez. Chai Chai.
Yeah.
Every radio person I know is laughing right now. Mm. Chai Chai Rodriguez, Your Highness the Almighty.
Uh-huh. Well, it's like the artist The Weeknd.
Yes, exactly right.
And I go back a long time with The Weeknd. I have a The Weeknd poster. I have a The Weeknd T-shirt. I have a The Weeknd ball cap.
Yeah, sure you do.
Yeah, yeah. I have a The Weeknd bumper sticker. There's only, you really have to have your game going with your followers, with your fans, in order to have a name like that. And I'm guessing I'll never have that. Like The Rock, but he's still like, Dwayne Johnson as the actor, right? You can call him The Rock, and everybody calls him The Rock. Right. And the thing is that, all right, likable guy, enormously successful, and you can get away with it. I'm going to have to work on that.
Okay, maybe then we can change it, because the only thing people have ever called me besides my regular name is Mac.
Stupid son of a... Dad, the microphone's on.
I forgot. We'll have to play that again this hour. That's our audio cut of the year. We already have it. How about something like Mac the Knife? Instead of Gary Mac.
I would just start with Mac and see where it goes.
You know, when I was a kid, I hated my name. I wanted to be...
Which one? Your first or last?
My first. First.
Yeah?
Gary was like, Gary.
Hmm.
Especially when kids at school found out my middle name, and then it was Gary Michael.
Okay.
And I actually remember this part of my life. I wanted to be like Jim or Bob.
Yeah.
And I did relate to... I remember when Johnny Cash did A Boy Named Sue, and I went, okay, Gary isn't that bad.
Yeah. I have a friend, and his name is Zeke Foster, and I'm thinking, dude, that's like a Private Eye name. The Adventures of Zeke Foster. And I'm like, man, that's like a cool name. I like my last name, Eric. It's like Eric. It just kind of falls out. Eric.
Well, if you're from Boston, maybe it sounds
Eric. Yeah, so now some people will just call me E. What's up, E?
And this is just in the last 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
A significant portion of my personal friends that I've met in Texas since I've been here.
Mm-hmm.
And it comes from a core of people that I first met. They all call me G.
Yeah.
That's right, that's...
Right.
And I don't, maybe they're just lazy. It's like, so I don't want to say the whole name.
With me, I think, and a number of my friends call me E, and I have my nieces and nephews, Uncle Lee, they call me. And so I think they really also hate my first name.
I will say this for years. Mm-hmm. I don't get it now, but for years, especially when I was in music radio, and then a significant portion after, I mean, probably the first 10 years in talk radio, mm-hmm. I would always get the question, what's your real name?
Mm-hmm.
Gary McNamara. No. That's your radio name. What's your real name?
Mm-hmm.
Gary McNamara. I'm a talk show host. I wouldn't use a fake name. It's who I am. The last thing I'd ever do.
Right.
Is use a fake name.
Right.
Because this isn't like you're just.
Which comes with its share of risks.
Yeah, but.
But that's part of what you do. It comes with the territory.
Well, you know what I mean. This is different than putting on a shtick for music radio. And I'm not saying that's bad. That's an entertainment. I was in it. I mean, I loved it when I was in it. But it's not the same as when you're actually talking about the things that you actually believe every day. You and I always talk about this. Every show, we sign our name to it.
Right.
This is us. There is no, you know, people. That's the one thing we will get. I don't get it as much anymore, but you and I both have gotten it, which is, well, what do you really think? You know, we know what you say on the radio. What do you really think?
I still get that. I got that the other day from a neighbor.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't get it much anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, that's always, well, it's exactly what I believe, what I say in the air. Well, no, that's basically that comes from the military-industrial complex media.
Yeah.
You know.
As long as we still receive the facts from them.
Politburo. I mean, it's like, no, it's what I really believe. Well, I mean, where do you get your talking points from?
The facts that comes from,
Eric?
From them. We get them from them.
Maybe I get a few talking points from Eric, but they're from Eric. They're not.
We get them from them.
But that is the one thing. And look, we live in a time of, you know, just look at all the conspiracy theories. When the other day, and I didn't see any of the game, but I saw social media when Tom Brady started coming back for Tampa. All the things, it's a fix. This proves it's a fix. It's a fix. It's a fix. It's a fix. I mean, people immediately want to believe that, okay, they want Tom Brady back in again. That way it's a fix. That's how it got to be 27. See, the game's going to, they kicked the field goal. The other team won. Tom Brady's out. Okay, we forget about that.
Mm-hmm.
People always want to believe there's something greater to a conspiracy, and so we have always gotten that. Well, who tells you what to say on the air? Mm-hmm. People find it very hard to believe that a major corporation, and not that I haven't worked for sole individual owners, because I have, even in talk radio. Three of the jobs I've had in talk radio were individual owners that actually own the radio station. Mm-hmm. The rest have been major corporations.
Mm-hmm.
Still the same.
Mm-hmm.
Except for one general manager one time, once. Nobody's ever told me what to say on the radio, ever.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And this was a guy that thought he was a programmer and he was a general manager. Here's what you should be saying. And I remember looking at him saying, well, then go find somebody who will do that because, you know, if you want to do that, fire me. I was direct with him. He did, and I never got fired. In fact,
Right.
That helped me because of that I said, okay, my days are numbered here, and I was still there. But a year later, I ended up finding a new job, and that's where my career really took off because you made the decision, I'm not going to be here. Once you say that to a general manager, they're going to find the first opportunity to get rid of you.
Yeah.
Because I was angry at that. And I normally don't. It was the most, I'll say it this way, animated that I ever got with somebody who was a boss. Because, then go do the show. You hired me. And that's one thing that you do get that in the business. People will hire you because they like your sound. And then from day one, they'll try to change your sound. I hired you because you know exactly what you're doing. All right, I've listened to your first show. I don't like what you're doing. But not content-wise. It really was never content-wise.
Yeah.
And you got
not content in that you need to change your opinion.
Your opinion, right.
Yeah.
Right. Maybe, we wish you would talk about something else. that you would get. Mm-hmm. But people find it hard to believe that a major corporation would simply, you know, say, okay, we want you two to go on and just say whatever you want, and we believe we can make a profit on that.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's got to be more than that. They want to control. You're simply being controlled. You're a marionette.
You know? Mm-hmm.
The strings are being pulled, and you're just, people find it hard to believe. Because I do. You and I've talked about it. Can you believe we worked this long in this business? It'll be 40 years for me, going on 33 in talk, but 40 total, where people have hired me and said, just go on the air and, you know, say what you think. You basically control a radio show.
Yeah.
What, are you nuts? Oh, no, it's the right move because I know exactly what I'm doing.
Yeah, it's the only full-time career I've had, and I've been doing it since high school, and it's always the same, and it has been in talk radio. The idea is that you do hire the right people if you're good at management. You hire the right people, and then
right.
Because it's a mutual understanding.
And as a boss, I always...
You and I know what we can and can't do.
Yeah. As a boss, I always hired people and let them be who they were because I wanted their distinct personality. If I'm controlling what they say, because I've been a boss of a radio station, if I'm controlling what they say, I'm not getting what I want.
Right. Like if we were on TV, I couldn't make this gesture with my hand. On the radio, I can do it all day.
You're just telling people that they're number one in your heart.
Look, see.
All right, so we've settled my new radio name, Stupid SOB.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think the president is on board even. That's quite the endorsement.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Tips from J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated on sleep apnea. Treatment of sleep apnea. If you're diagnosed with sleep apnea, your doctor will discuss your treatment options with you. The most common treatment for sleep apnea is the use of a CPAP machine. CPAP stands for Continuous Positive Airway Pressure, and it will regulate your breathing while you sleep. Because you'll no longer be struggling for air, you'll sleep more soundly and feel more refreshed when you wake up. Other potential treatments for sleep apnea include an oral device that will reposition your jaw or tongue so that your airway isn't blocked. If you have severe sleep apnea and these treatments don't work for you, then surgery may be required, but surgery usually isn't needed. After being successfully treated, you'll sleep much better, and as a result, you'll feel more alert and rested during the day. And the good news for drivers who have been medically disqualified because of sleep apnea is that they can regain their medically qualified to drive status once they are being treated successfully. This tip was brought to you by J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated. Visit us at jjkeller.com.
This report is brought to you by National Truck Protection and Premium 2000 Plus, the number one selling aftermarket truck warranties in North America. Available at thousands of used truck dealers everywhere.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. So the president is in agreement with my new radio name.
I think so.
More inflation. What a stupid son of a bitch.
Sorry, that's just... By the way, he does not look down immediately. He's looking side to side. I was just looking at the audio cut from CNN, Jake Tapper saying, he knew he said it.
He knew he said it.
He knew he said it, and that it went out because they said he didn't. Because if you see it, he's just his head's going side to side, and finally it looks down, but it's a couple of seconds afterwards.
Well, I think that's his delayed response. I think that again, he's kind of out of it, and it echoed in the room. You can hear it echoing in the room.
Yes. The thing is, too, when I played it again and stopped the frame of it. Everybody's turned around and walking out by the time he said that.
Ducey is walking out.
And here's the funny thing, just the symbolism of it, all the reporters' backs are to him.
Yeah, right.
And he's still standing there at the podium.
Yeah.
It's like reverse from what we had months ago.
Right.
Was when his back was to everybody else, and they're all screaming at him.
Here's the thing. I think Biden doesn't... I don't think he cares that the microphone was on. I think he probably wasn't aware that it was on, but then again, he's not aware of a lot of things, apparently. But I think he wanted to shout that. I think he's absolutely okay with it. I think he wanted to go full Mandelbaum. I think he wanted to throw the gauntlet down in that moment.
Oh, that's my name. That'll be my radio name.
The full Mandelbaum?
Mac Mandelbaum.
Yeah. Sounds like a professional wrestler.
Exactly.
I'm going to be Cold Stone Creamery. I'm going to be a professional wrestler.
Ducey said, it's nothing personal, pal.
Pal.
And then we went back and forth.
Pal.
And we were talking about just moving forward. But as Ducey said, he goes, Ducey's like, I don't care. It's
right.
No big deal.
Right. Not personal with him either.
One 90 Red Eye. Call with your reaction. Red Eye Radio.
And he's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. 90 Red Eye. Oh, we forgot to talk about this because you and I weren't on the air for so much of last week, and we haven't been on together. Well, we were yesterday, but almost for 2 weeks because of COVID. Mm. But, and so I just happened to be going through scanning and I went, oh, we forgot to talk about this.
Yeah.
And we got to catch up. Got to make sure we catch up on all the topics that we never got a chance to discuss. The whole thing with Nina Totenberg and NPR, where she did the report about the Supreme Court justices. It began with this story here. It was a pretty jarring earlier this month when the justices of the U.S. Supreme Court took the bench for the first time since the Omicron surge over the holidays. All were now wearing masks. All that is except Justice Neil Gorsuch. What's more, Justice Sotomayor was not there at all, choosing instead to participate through a microphone set up in her chambers.
Uh-huh.
Sotomayor has diabetes, a condition that puts her at high risk for serious illness or even death from COVID-19. She has been the only justice to wear a mask on the bench since last fall, when amid a marked decline in COVID-19 cases, the justices resumed in-person arguments for the first time. Now, although the situation has changed with the Omicron surge, and according to court sources, Sotomayor did not feel safe in close proximity to people who were unmasked. Chief Justice John Roberts, understanding that in some form, asked the justices to mask up. They all did except Gorsuch, who, as it happens, sits next to Sotomayor on the bench. He continued refusal. His continued refusal since then has also meant that Sotomayor has not attended the justices' weekly conference in person, joining instead by telephone. Then, by the time we got to last Wednesday, three Supreme Court justices issued statements Wednesday addressing a NPR story about relations among the justices. On Tuesday, NPR reported that Justice Sotomayor, a longtime diabetic, had indicated to Chief Justice John Roberts that because of the Omicron surge, she did not feel safe being in a room with people who are unmasked, and that the Chief Justice, in some form, asked the others to mask up. On Wednesday, Sotomayor and Gorsuch issued a statement saying she did not ask him to wear a mask. NPR's report did not say that she did. Then the Chief Justice, after that, issued a statement saying he did not request Justice Gorsuch or any other justice to wear a mask on the bench. The NPR report says that the Chief Justice asked the justice
in some form.
NPR stands by its reporting.
Uh-huh. That's what I loved about that story. NPR stands by its reporting, and this whole thing is over a mask. But,
yeah.
But really, it is. It's about the rift, and you know, that hit after the mandate fell at the Supreme Court, the OSHA mandate fell. And I just thought to myself, because if you listen to the hearing on the OSHA mandate, Sotomayor and Kagan were the two that were the most vocal. Breyer, too, but and that's how the decisions fell. But they were clearly upset. And in fact, saying things that weren't true during that hearing. And so when this came out, I was like, not surprising, not shocking at all. And by the way, I have no idea, you know, what the policy should be. I don't know how far apart they sit when they're all together. But they're not right next to each other.
Well, that to me, I mean, we've discussed that. The key to me of this story is Stoltenberg and how she kept backing off and backing off and backing off. And then how social media, if you were paying attention to social media, once Sotomayor and Gorsuch came out and said, no, she never asked him to wear a mask, and then it came out, and then the left went crazy on social media. She didn't say that, because then Nina Stoltenberg came out and said, well, we didn't say that she did.
Yeah.
And then the Chief Justice came out, and by the way, they hardly ever issue any type of statement.
Especially on something like this.
Issued a statement saying that he did not request either to wear a mask on the bench, and said that was too much. And then it says NPR stands by its reporting. This was too much for even NPR's public editor, Kelly McBride, ostensibly some sort of ombudsman, who was not exactly known for blowing the whistle on left-wing bias. Readers will recall Ms. McBride as a willing participant in the disgraceful media blackout of the New York Post accurate reporting about the Biden family business prior to the 2020 election. Now Ms. McBride acknowledges that Stoltenberg report needs a clarification. On Thursday, Ms. McBride assessed the Stoltenberg claims about the Supreme Court. Here's a key assertion in the story. The situation has changed, and according to court sources, Sotomayor did not feel safe in close proximity to people who were unmasked. Chief Justice John Roberts, understanding that in some form or another, asked the judges to mask up. Later Tuesday, Ms. Stoltenberg changed the word asked to suggested, saying, so Chief Justice John Roberts, understanding that in some form, suggested that the other justices mask up. If it's true that Ms. Stoltenberg used the word suggested in a separate NPR appearance last week, but she has not corrected the story in which she claimed the Chief Justice asked, Ms. McBride continues, exactly how did Roberts in some form ask or suggest his colleagues to cover up? Stoltenberg told me she hedged on this. Quote, if I knew exactly how he communicated this, I would say it. Ms. Stoltenberg and NPR are standing behind a story without even knowing what the story is.
Well, that's the whole thing, is that my first question on the original story was, define in some form. Those words, define. What do you mean by that? Specifically, what do you know about what the Chief Justice did or didn't do, said or didn't say? What is the suggestion? Don't say in some form. That's like, you know, we have to go back to Seinfeld all over again. It's yada, yada, yada. Basically, she yada, yada, yada'd her way through this story.
Right.
And you know, it didn't surprise me that there may have been a rift between the justices on masks at the Supreme Court. I was like, okay, that's not a story. The story is the failure of NPR, and by the way, this is a huge failure. Is it a nothing story?
Yeah.
In terms of the content of the mask and who's wearing a mask and who isn't, by the way, I think we all get it, right? We pretty much get the makeup of the Supreme Court. But beyond that, it's important because of how the media wants to portray things, because the original story made it seem like that Chief Justice Roberts was kind of put out with having to, you know, address this, and that Gorsuch was throwing down some kind of gauntlet.
Right. And that's how it came across at first. And then they kept backing off. And then when the response initially came from the justices, well, we didn't say that. And then you should have, it just on social media, on Twitter, the left was going nuts.
No.
That's not saying that. See, you're taking it out. And then Roberts comes out and says, no, none of this happened. And then everybody went quiet. I mean, just completely quiet.
Right.
But as James Freeman writes here, because this is from the Wall Street Journal, James Freeman's column, Ms. Stoltenberg and NPR are standing behind a story without even knowing what the story is. If listeners weren't skeptical enough about a story that had been flatly rejected on the record by the Chief Justice, they are now being asked to believe a tale attributed to anonymous sources who cannot or won't provide either documentary evidence or even the most basic details related to their claims. Once Ms. Totenberg gave NPR sources anonymity, why could these sources not share the form and the timing of the alleged communications? If they're sources, why can't you go back to your sources and say, okay, exactly how was it phrased?
Yeah, right.
You know why?
Because you got sources,
because the sources weren't in the room.
Yeah. You got burned.
They got,
she burned herself.
Yeah, she burned herself.
You ran with something that wasn't solid.
Right. She ran on speculation.
And the intent was clear to portray, again, Gorsuch as throwing down the gauntlet and that Roberts was put out by having to deal with that and that they were essentially the right side of the court, if you're going to, you know, split it up.
Yes, exactly.
Was put out and upset with Sotomayor making a big deal about it. And they, NPR, we stand by our reporting. No, I'm sure you do. Please do. But you're being called out for it and you've got nothing. And it is important because this happens with other stories that have greater significance all the time. And I'm not saying NPR does this all the time. I'm saying the media does this quite a bit, and when it happens, they need to be called out for it.
And then Freeman writes, a disconnect between the story and Chief Justice Roberts' statement is concerning to many NPR listeners and readers who wrote to us. One wrote and said, when will Nina Totenberg be issuing a retraction or correction to her article, given that it is false and based on nothing at all, or at least much more complicated than your article indicates. Another writer or another listener wrote, I saw the in some form part as a justification for standing by reporting, but there's no explanation why that is. A request, regardless of the form it came in, is a request, correct? In order for the story to be true, as NPR first reported, Roberts would have had to ask in some form, but if he didn't, full stop. Sadly, the network has been ignoring the sound advice offered by its listeners and even a gentle critique from its own public editor. On Friday, an NPR spokesperson reiterated the organization's support for Totenberg. She said that McBride, who criticized Totenberg, is independent and doesn't speak on behalf of NPR. So they're backing her up on it. People can ask lots of things. The job of a journalist is to report what they actually say and do. And there's no reason anonymous sources shouldn't be able to tell NPR the particulars of the alleged request unless they're passing along unverifiable secondhand claims or just making it up. And there's no reason NPR should share such information with the listeners. Well, of course it should, because they're propagandists pushing forward a narrative.
Right.
Totenberg was pushing forward a narrative, as you just explained what the narrative is.
Mm-hmm.
Conservative Supreme Court Justice, bad. Willing to harm liberal Supreme Court Justice.
Right. You know, she has diabetes and she's at risk and he doesn't care.
Right.
He's willing to put her life at risk.
Biden would say, why that heartless SOB?
Right.
God,
which one, Roberts or Gorsuch? But that's the problem.
Gorsuch.
Right. That's the problem.
Roberts.
Yeah, it could be both. Yeah, it fits. But who knows? We'd have to ask Biden. But it is, again, this portrayal of the right doesn't care. They're willing to risk people's lives.
And that's, look, we understand because that's the narrative that exists out there.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's exactly...
It's virtue signaling.
The past year was going down.
Again and again and again and again.
Yeah. Glad I happened to be scanning and I saw the story. I went, oh, we never talked about that from last week.
Yeah, yeah.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Coming up following the top of the hour, the Supreme Court to take up two racial preferences issues at Harvard and the University of North Carolina. We will get to that coming up. And the teammate of the trans swimmer, Leah Thomas, says women are now third-class citizens in this country.
Uh-huh.
They used to be second-class citizens.
Uh-huh.
Now they're third-class citizens. And it seems like, too, it's starting to come out now, something that we've said for the longest time, because we have seen, which is really amazing, biological men kill the liberal feminist movement in this country,
right?
Which is pretty amazing when you think about it. You and I stated this a long time ago, and we're no geniuses. We're the two idiots overnight, and we figured out over 10 years ago in the direction this was going that this would destroy feminism. And it's a pretty easy concept. If a biological man can say, I'm a woman, and it's accepted in liberalism, then feminism is dead.
Yeah.
If a man can say, I'm a woman.
Right.
And you must accept that. And we knew that the final nail in the coffin of the liberal feminist movement in this country was on what here it was about a year ago when Gloria Steinem came out and said she supports trans rights.
Right.
Gloria Steinem submitted to the biological man.
Yes.
That is the new liberal feminism.
That was the permanent turn.
Yep.
And what is going to happen in the future is the question.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America and around the world, 866-90 Red Eye. He is Eric Harney, and I'm Gary McNamara. Good morning.
Hello.
Download our Red Eye Radio app today and listen when you want to our show.
That's why it's a Red Eye Radio app.
Mm-hmm. Got to bring this up, even though it was delayed because Sarah Palin has COVID till beginning of February. Her lawsuit against the New York Times was supposed to begin tomorrow, or yesterday, excuse me.
Yeah, right.
And the reason I bring this up is because you and I, as soon as we saw the editorial, I remember looking at you, and this goes back to 2017. I remember looking at you and saying, Eric, I actually think she has a legit case to sue the New York Times. Because even though she's a public figure, you can actually make the case for malice.
Right.
If people don't remember it, reading from the New York Post from yesterday, at the center of the 2008 GOP vice presidential nominee's federal suit is a 2017 editorial that incorrectly linked Sarah Palin to the 2011 mass shooting in Arizona, where six people were killed and more than a dozen were injured, including then-Congresswoman Gabby Giffords. The editorial, quote, falsely stated as a matter of fact to millions of people that Mrs. Palin incited the January 8th, 2011 shooting rampage at a political event in Tucson, Arizona. Lawyers for the former Alaska governor wrote in the complaint. The Times has since corrected the editorial, acknowledging both falsely linking Palin to the violence and mischaracterizing an ad Palin's Political Action Committee ran, which put certain congressional districts, including Giffords, under crosshairs. Originally, the Times had said the ad placed lawmakers themselves beneath the crosshairs. By the way, a big difference. Palin said the mistake was libelous and sued the Times in 2017 in Manhattan federal court, where jury selection was supposed to be start yesterday, but it was delayed because she has COVID.
Mm.
For Palin to win, her lawyers just cannot prove that the Times was wrong, which the paper has already admitted it was. She must show that the editors and writers at the paper acted with malice, ignoring the facts on purpose to sully her names. Her name, excuse me. The Times has called it an honest mistake that happened in the rush on deadline. The Times worked hard to get the case dismissed, but a three-judge appellate court ruled in 2019, said it could go forward. Remember, one federal judge did dismiss it, remember?
Yeah, basically saying that, well, they retracted it and, you know, admitted they were wrong, so it's over. Well, it's not over because, again, if her legal team can prove that there or demonstrate that there was malice, that, that their intent was, you know, to essentially damage not just Sarah Palin, but the people who were active in her campaign that came up with that ad, which essentially was to lead people to believe that she and her campaign were in part responsible for Jared Loughner's actions on that day. He was the shooter.
Right.
And so that is a, that's a huge, you know, again, they're going to have to demonstrate that, but I think there's a road to do that. I think it's if they do it right, I think it's quite possible that they can do it convincingly.
When it happened in 2011, it was very quickly that that accusation came out against Sarah Palin.
Yeah.
Which then, at that point, all the facts of that ad came out.
Right.
And it was right. And it was basically at that point, everybody knew what the truth was, mm-hmm. and knew that she did not have an ad that had crosshairs on any lawmakers but the actual congressional districts. And it was put to rest. And so when this was reintroduced in 2017, when you and I read the editorial, and we read the editorial on the air so people could hear it, and I looked at you and just said, Eric, how is this not libelous with malice? Because there was no way that you could be in the media and not know what they were saying was false.
By that time.
It was 6 years after.
Yes.
There's no way you didn't know it. I don't believe that you can convince reasonable people such as Eric and Gary, or whatever my name is now, that was not just a hit job to go after Sarah Palin. Because then you have two choices. It's libelous with malice, or you have elementary school students that are in the opinion section of the New York Times. One or the other.
Yeah.
That they are completely incompetent, know nothing about history, have never followed a political story, have never followed a shooting. That they became opinion editors of the New York Times, responsible for writing editorials, and they came from a kindergarten class.
Hmm.
And that's why, because we looked at this, we said, my God, you can make the case for, I never forget looking at you, and we were like, how could the New York Times put themselves in such legal peril? What was it? And that's at that point we said, is the hate so great? And this was 2017. Was a hate so great for Sarah Palin that emotionally they just still, after all that time, couldn't get out of it? Because obviously anyone who knows anything about libel and malice would look at that, and any lawyer from the New York Times would have said, don't you dare print that. You're out of your minds? What are you doing? You and I both know that. They know that.
It would have been one thing for James Bennett, the author that wrote this at the New York Times, to have written a story that it is dangerous to have campaigns that are inflammatory, that are that use violent rhetoric, blah 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 blah. You can and they do, the liberal media, the media in general, often go off on those kind of tangents. It's a different thing when you say, when you write it the way that he wrote it, and you want people to believe, because this would be the allegations by Palin and her legal team, that he did so with malice in the way that he wrote it to make people believe that she and her campaign, the people who came up with the campaign, that particular campaign, were in part responsible for that shooting.
Right.
And again, the timeline is extremely important, because we're not talking in the week or two or even months after it happened. Years after it happened, and how it had been essentially hashed out by the other media and other individuals along the way as to, all right, the allegations were pointing, people were pointing their finger at her and at this campaign, and then they broke it down, and it was like, okay, that's over the top. And it was over. The reason you and I took notice when the New York Times came out with this story is because we were asking the question, why in the world are they going back years on a story that's already done? It's already put to bed.
Yeah.
Is this a reprint of something from years ago? I mean, where did this come from? And that's the difference. I think that's going to be important if the legal team does their job, to point that out and say that by this time, as you mentioned, there is no one, especially at that level, at the New York Times, and I'm not trying to put them on a pedestal. I'm just saying it's a large media organization, and by that time, there is no one at that level who didn't already know that this thing had been hashed out.
And the editors that looked at the editorial before it went out also.
Right, yes. Right. And so you couldn't make that case, yet they decided to do it anyway.
Right.
And so the question is, you know, I mean, and it will be very interesting, I think, to watch this case play out. You know, it's now, well, the case itself is 4 years plus in the making. And so, and as you mentioned, delayed right now by COVID, but it is going to go forth, and we'll see where, you know, what the decision is, what happens as a result of this. It's important, and you and I don't speak for Sarah Palin, even though
no.
we were the first to speak of her on a large scale in 2008.
Yeah. Yes, we were.
Early 2008, early, when people were asking right. who John McCain would pick, possibly, and we brought her name up.
We brought up Sarah Palin.
Very early in 2008. Yeah. But like any public servant, whether she was running for vice president on that ticket, or as a governor, former governor of Alaska, or anyone else who's in the public arena, we've had, you know, issues and questions and concerns, like we always do. So we're not here to champion or speak for Sarah Palin, but I think it's an important case, and I would guess that. Of course, she sees that it is important, but it's important, and maybe she agrees that it's important because the media needs to know that you can't get away with this kind of behavior. That when you write this about someone, even a public figure, it's not just the public figure, because I would say that, again, her staff, the people, the creative people that were part of, you know, coming up with the campaign, the ad campaign, they also were, you could make the case that they were hurt by this. They were damaged by this. And it was with malicious intent. I think that they can make this case. We'll see if they can do that convincingly.
Yeah, that's the thing where we look, and I don't know. I don't know legally whether, I would think it would be that part of malice is the fact that this was so obviously false and had so long been false. It's almost as if a sports writer came out and said that Green Bay won the Super Bowl last year. And kept insisting that Green Bay won the Super Bowl last year. They would lose total credibility because everybody knows Tampa won it last year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, that's how I'm trying to find something that if you're in political news and cover political news, something that was so incredibly obvious. I'm trying to get a sports analogy. That's the closest that I can come to right now off the top of my head, that it was so obvious that what they wrote was false. Mm-hmm. That you look at it and say, we've known this is false for such a long time, not, as you said, not 2 weeks, not a year, not two years, almost six years went by, and they still wrote something that had been debunked that targeted a particular person and their campaign. As if, you know, you did this to incite a murder or a number of murders.
When it is a very broad understanding in terms of the metaphor here.
Right,
and it's a military metaphor, but it used in the political battlefield.
And it had been rehashed over and over again 6 years earlier and actually put to bed. Okay, that's not what happened. You can't use that anymore. That's false. You and I talked about it when it happened back in 2011.
Mm-hmm.
That's how we knew. That's why by the time I got to 2017, I looked at you and said, Eric, she's got a case for malice.
Well,
it's not just being libel. It's malice is the key because she's a public figure.
Yeah. Well, because, again, if Bennett had written, Sarah Palin's wrong and blah, blah, blah. He could even go as far as to say, like they always do. And I'm not saying he has done this in the past. I'm just saying that as an example, Palin is a bigot. She's go off on the liberal tangent that they have done so many on the right. You can have your opinion about someone. It is different when it comes to libel when you are implying that she and her campaign in part responsible for that shooting. That means an indirect involvement, but an involvement nonetheless, and we'll see where it leads.
866-90-RED-EYE.
This is the Marketplace Minute. I'm Justin Ho. After a week of losses, stocks closed up. The Dow and the S&P gained 0.3%, and the NASDAQ added over 0.6%. Manufacturing output in January grew at its slowest pace in over a year and a half, according to a survey by IHS Markit. It says that's in large part because a lot of manufacturing workers have COVID and are calling out sick. That said, manufacturers are optimistic that output will improve in the near term. Over 70% of small business owners say the Omicron variant has reduced their revenue. That's according to a new survey from Goldman Sachs. Over a third say they've had to scale back operations, mostly due to labor shortages. And Ford says it's halting new orders for its compact Maverick pickup truck, set to launch this year. An executive told the Wall Street Journal that Ford didn't want to take more orders than it could build. I'm Justin Ho with the Marketplace Minute.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye was just reading Jonathan Turley, just very quickly going back to Biden and him calling Fox News reporter Pete Ducey a stupid, you know, son of a bee. As he was trying to make the case, imagine if Trump did that to a reporter, the outrage you'd have from the
media. Oh, yeah, right. Right.
I mean, we laughed it off because it's Biden. It's him channeling Izzy Mandelbaum. But could you imagine the left if Trump would have done that to a reporter like that?
Jim Acosta at CNN was commandeering the microphone, wouldn't give it up to anybody else, and believed that it was his talk show when he was in the press room. And the day that he was kicked out, then President Trump entertained multiple questions from Acosta. You didn't see that part portrayed by the rest of the media. It was the poor victim, Jim Acosta, is being shut out. And there wasn't even an expletive.
No.
That was on Acosta. And by the way, it finally came out from other reporters that, yeah, he's a showboater.
Mm-hmm.
And he believes it's his show when he's in the room. Well, that wasn't going to be reported by the other liberal media, whether it was CNN or anybody else. No, Trump was the bad guy. Biden. Stupid SOB.
Mm-hmm.
Where's the outrage from the liberal media?
American Nitpickers, Gary McNamara and Eric Hurley on Red Eye Radio.
All right, we were waiting for that.
That's our new show, which will be streaming soon, American Nitpickers. Yeah, we go around the country.
Red Eye version.
Yeah. Just starting
all right.
Chaos and mayhem.
I wanted that. I like that.
Yeah.
Like that,
That's us.
And I forgot how we came up with that a couple of weeks ago.
You were talking about it, and you said democracy, which is under the umbrella of a republic for the nitpickers out there. And I said, are we the American nitpickers?
Ah, that was it. Yes.
And that should be a show on history. And,
okay.
You know,
that's where we came up with that.
So I think
if history
is listening, they can give us a call.
I was reading that the numbers, the TV rating numbers, are down since Frank is gone.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I haven't watched in years, only because I just don't watch television anymore.
You know when I watch it?
Hmm.
I don't know why. Like, I don't watch it when it becomes like September or October, fall time.
Hmm.
I'll binge on it.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is about fall and the romance of driving the van around America. Because I'd hate the job. But when you... the last thing I ever want to do is drive around in a van and pick through garbage. Pick through stuff where there's spiders and rats.
I would find it fascinating.
Nah, I would.
Yeah. In fact, I've done it before in buying properties, so...
No,
It's a lot of fun. You find a lot of hidden gems.
I mean, I love the show. Mm. And I have a certain... It's one of the things that I have. I look and I go, wow, that'd be great. No, it wouldn't. You'd hate every moment of it. Oh, that's right, I would. But there is a certain romance to being out on the roads across America, meeting people in the heartland, people that have, you know, produced things and built things. And, mm-hmm. and because they have, they've got a ton of garbage that's worth value. And it's the ultimate in capitalism,
mm-hmm.
making money looking at junk.
Yeah.
That people have just, It's not really junk. It's a lot of stuff people have stored, but it's not when they go into the places of people that are collectors, you know, amateur collectors, and then are willing to sell the stuff. It's when they go through junk piles. That's the stuff that I actually love watching. I could never do that.
Well, because 99% of what they do, you don't see. It doesn't end up on television because
right.
it's not. They're not finding the gem.
Exactly. Right. But I just heard the ratings were down with Frank gone. I mean, there was a certain relationship that they had there. So
yeah, I think so.
Yeah, it's like, you know, you'd be nothing without me.
Are you talking to me?
in all humbleness.
Uh-huh. Right.
I do like that. Very quickly, because I just want to get back to it, and it's off the topic a little bit. We'll get to the whole transgender story that's out there now where you've got one of the women swimmers swimming with Leah Thomas saying that women are now third-class citizens. It's what we have said all along. I mean, mm-hmm. you talk yeah. about – and by the way, it's being used again. I've saw another article saying the transphobia is coming back again. Mm. Well, fine, let's do the name calling again. How dare you, you misogynist femophobe.
Mm-hmm.
Now that we've name called, now we can get on with the discussion.
Yeah,
you've name right. called from your side. We'll name call from our side. Now we'll get on with the discussion here in a little bit. But I just want to get to something because you had said something which is really quite simple but quite prolific when you said, wow, Biden is the best gift ever given to Democrats when Democrats
Republicans,
believe
yeah.
To Republicans mm-hmm. when Democrats believe that Trump was the greatest gift ever given to them.
Look, Trump in 24 could quite possibly win, but if he were to run again, win by default because of how bad it is. And we played you, well, we didn't play you the audio. We cited the audio, the video, from Charlemagne the God.
Leonard Larry.
And you're talking about somebody who is a far-left liberal who promoted Biden to the extent of having him on his podcast. And now, well over a year later, is saying that some of his friends are saying, man, you know, bring Trump back. Okay, I don't know if that's even true or accurate, if it was hyperbole or what, but for him to say that,
yes,
for him to say that, it might not be true, but for him to say that indicates a massive, massive, massive problem for the re-election efforts of a Joe Biden. But it also says a lot about what 2024 well could be, and you know the whole January 6th thing and everything else, all that is likely going to be off the minds of the American people. Not that the Democrats aren't going to use it; they're going to use the imagery. They're going to have the campaign ads and everything else. They will go to town on that. Trump could be on the debate stage if I were on Trump's campaign committee or on his team. I'd say, Mr. Trump, on the debate stage, give all your time over to Joe Biden. Let him walk himself into, as he's often done, into a ramble that nobody can explain over and over again. And also, I would say, challenge him. I would say, every single time you can, throw in one of the jabs.
Yeah. Well,
get Izzy Mandelbaum. Bring Izzy Mandelbaum out. He's Mr. Biden. The polls show you're the worst president of all time. Right. I would repeat that every debate.
Or you just made me laugh here when you said let him speak. I could see, all right, Mr. Trump, you know, you were president once. What would you do if you became president again? I would secure our borders. I've always been a builder. We'd build back the economy again. We'd ensure that we would have the economy that we were attempting to attain, which had record numbers of blacks, Hispanics, and everybody. Actually working in raw numbers. So that
I was doing
that,
what I was. Right. I would do what I was doing right. before COVID hit.
Right, and right, exactly. And now I've taken my 30 seconds. I defer my 5 minutes. I give the rest of my 5 minutes and 5 minutes for Biden to extrapolate what he would do. And I would wish that he would take the entire time to do it.
Yeah,
to do it. But when is it just me? Am I jumping on this too quickly? Or after the New York Times editorial on Saturday, blasting him,
mm-hmm.
saying that he's had a very, very poor year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now that we got past that, we got past the Biden speech on the election law. America doesn't buy into the democracy is ending. You know, that's right. One thing that Leonard Larry, Charlemagne the God, was saying,
mm-hmm.
you know, the liberal talk show host. He was stating the fact that, you know, the whole democracy thing, democracy's not falling apart because they're not acting like it's falling apart. It's just pure rhetoric.
Right.
And then the Hillary thing coming up. And you and I talked about this when the Hillary thing came up. Is it going to make people that are far left crazy?
Mm-hmm.
Is the far left now, I guess this is my point, with the New York Times coming out after him, with Larry Leonard, Charlemagne the God coming out after him, who else did? Somebody else? You see, for example, liberals like Bill Maher, Barry Weiss, you know, on the whole thing, COVID is over. This is just ridiculous. Is the far left, because what we have seen so far is independents. Of course, Republicans were never going to be for Biden. That's a given. But you win elections based on what independents are. Independents, he is tanked, and you see the significant erosion in Democrats now. But what has remained loyal until last week is the liberal vote. Now you see, and you and I have talked about this, another poll, I forgot the poll. Oh, there's another poll that came out yesterday that he was at record lows. You and I talked about the civics poll where he was minus 22. I mean, you're talking about minus 20 figures now, but it's consistent. Even when Trump went down, Trump came back. You see no coming back for this president whatsoever. I guess my question is the media slowly turning on him since last week? Do they finally realize there's nothing left? You and I talked about the, and thanks for the response. We got some great response on talking about the editorial that was in Politico that was written by a liberal who was saying, you know, the Biden bounce, you know, expect the Biden bounce to come back. And you and I last week looked at this, or I looked at it. You weren't here last week, but you probably looked at it when you read it and said the same thing I did. The headline, what the hell are they talking about, the Biden bounce?
Uh-huh.
How would they expect he's going to come back? And the whole point was, and this is from a liberal, he has been so bad, so incredibly bad, that he's done everything wrong. He says everything wrong. He does everything wrong. That he's been so bad and his numbers have tanked so much that there's nowhere to go but up. And that was the philosophy. So it wasn't that they said, oh, people aren't just listening to what he's saying. What they're saying is he has blown it so bad as a president that the bounce will be that if he just isn't as bad as he was. And you can see now they're coming out and doing different things. You see the White House now. Well, part of the problem for the police is the underfunding of the police.
Mm-hmm.
That's just going to tick off the left.
Yeah.
You're losing the far left now. And nobody, no independent or Republican is going to believe you. When you go so far left as he has, and then try to back off on it, eventually, you know, fool me once, fine. Fool me twice, you know, shame on me. And when you've had this happen so much where you'll have a Democrat go so far left and then try to repair it, maybe that would work 10 years ago. I just don't think it works today. And so when you said that about Leonard Larry, Charlemagne the God, the far left liberal talk show host who came out and said that, they said, look, my friends are saying, hey, why not Trump? At least we knew where he stood. Basically, what they're saying is, and these people on the far left, Biden is pure BS.
Yeah, he's stupid.
Oh, I'm sorry. That was
here's what I would say, you know, and there is proof that the erosion within the party is extremely real. In fact, it's pretty amazing if you look at it. It's mind-boggling how bad it is getting for him. California, he's underwater. There are only four states where he is above water in the civics poll. In the civics poll, his approval numbers are above water in only four states, and actually one of those states, Maryland, he's even. It's 43-43, so they technically put him above water because of the group that doesn't approve or disapprove. So he's really only above water measurably in three states. Look at one of those states, Massachusetts, where you go back to last May, and he had 63% approval, 31% disapproval. This is Massachusetts, May of last year. Right now, in Massachusetts, 45% approval, 40% disapproval. This is one of only three states where he is measurably above water in approval ratings in the civics polling. And you look at this and the erosion is startling. If you're a Democrat right now, I don't know what you do.
866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. You know, when talking about Biden, the one thing that is unique to him, and again, this is just, you know, looking at the civics poll. And again, we never look at one poll as gospel truth, but it...
We look at the trend,
right,
the movement.
We look at the trend, and when you look at Biden with young people, this is not talked about. Day one, he had 78% approval, 15% disapproval. All right. That was day one in office. We are a year now into it. 47% approval.
Yeah.
From 78 to 47 with young people.
That's the energy in the Democratic Party that they need, especially in a presidential year. That energy isn't always there in a midterm, but that demographic is a big part of the energy in a presidential election.
By the way, that's with Democrats. That's Democrats 18 to 34.
Yeah.
47% approval rating.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
Not overall.
Right.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.